Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally Elcordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today is Memorial Day, and as such, I have just gone out to my email list to let them know that there are victims of legislation, just as our warriors go to war because our legislators deem it so, and many have fallen. Our legislators are legislating vaccines for children, and many of them have fallen. I would not hesitate to say a vastly larger group than the warriors in the war. The warriors themselves are being taken down by the anthrax vaccine. I have interviewed a man by the name of Michael Bird, who, while he was not a casualty right away, as were many who served in the first Gulf War, 3-1 died from the anthrax vaccine over those deployed. That is significant. However, many years later, he could not get acknowledgement that he was suffering ailments from the anthrax vaccine. He couldn't get any help, and he eventually committed suicide. So he is also a casualty. His children are suffering the same kinds of ailments that he is suffering. So who knows how many generations will be affected. I have gone out today in memory of a parent's children whom I've interviewed who have died as a result of the Hep B vaccine, the flu shot, and many others. I've interviewed people who are serving time in prison and who may go to prison for shaken baby syndrome, which is a false accusation because it has resulted, as doctors themselves have written, from the vaccinations. So we have just tragedy beyond tragedy when it comes to vaccines, and the HPV vaccine is taking down young girls in record numbers, and this is just an immense concern. So I am about to pick up a woman by the name of Frida Burrell. Frida Burrell will be hosting this segment. I am very pleased to inform you. She is one of the co-administrators of SaneVax.org, and I recommend you look at this site because they profile mainly HPV victims, HPV vaccine victims. And she will, her first interview will be one of those ladies. We'll be speaking about that. And her second interview will be in regard to the yellow fever vaccine. And I welcome Frida Burrell, who is my honored host for the day. I hope I'm picking up the correct name. Let's see. Hello, is this Frida Burrell?
Hi, no, I think you've got me, Karen.
Okay, stay right there. You're the first guest, so just hang on the line. Thank you. Hello, is this Frida Burrell?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful.
Can you hear me, Sally?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly, Frida. I'm going to turn over the show to you now. I will put myself on mute, okay?
Yes, and have you got Karen online?
Yes, I'm here, Frida.
Oh, that's wonderful. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Okay, I'm Frida Burrell, and I come from Scotland in the United Kingdom, and I'm Secretary of SaneVax, and I deal with a lot of families in the United Kingdom, but also overseas, whose daughters have been seriously injured by either the cervix or the Gardasil HPV vaccine. So I want to introduce you all to a good friend of mine, Karen Riles. Karen is from a town near Wakefield in Yorkshire, which is in the northeast of England. And Karen's daughter Emily has been harmed by the HPV vaccine Cervarix. So Karen, it's over to you, love. You now tell your story and how this has affected Emily, how it's affected your life and Mark's life and our education.
Thanks very much, Frieda. And thank you, Sally, for having me on the show. My daughter, Emily, is now 16. She had the cervarix vaccine when she'd just turned 13. And as an unvaccinated, un-HPV vaccinated 13-year-old, she was wonderful. She was a straight-A student at school. She was in the top sets for all her subjects. She had fantastic ambitions. She played sports for the school. She played hockey, netball, and athletics and represented the school. She danced competitively. She danced from the age of 3, and she did all the competitions. And she was learning to play the guitar. She was a real go-getter type of girl. She had fabulous ambitions. She was going to become a dancer. She was going to do a stint on the West End. She was going to go to Broadway. She had all sorts of wonderful ambitions. And then she had the HPV vaccine, which completely turned her life upside down. She had the first shot in October 2010. About two and a half weeks after that first shot, she had what at the time we thought it was a mild virus, like a mild stomach flu type virus, and we thought nothing more about it. She had the second shot in December 2010, just before Christmas, and again two and a half weeks later, she had another, again we thought it was a virus, but it was much more severe. It really floored her for about 3 weeks. She was in bed, and she had fever, vomiting, rash, headache. She couldn't stand the light. She had sensitivity to light. She had muscle aches. She was very dizzy, very weak, and exhausted. She had to be helped to the bathroom. Again, we thought it was flu. I can remember saying to her, "This is what real flu is like. It puts you in bed for a few weeks." And then she was due to go back to school after the new year. And she went back to school and back to her normal activities. And every two or three days, I would get a call from school to go and pick her up. And she had come over nauseous, dizzy, everything hurt. And I'd take her home. She'd be in bed for a few days. And then gradually recover and back to school. And this just went on and on and on. We consulted the doctor in the middle of January, and he put it down to a post-viral syndrome and said it should settle in about 6 weeks, but it didn't. It just went on, and she got worse and worse. And gradually, she had to drop all of her activities. She stopped doing PE at school. Then she stopped doing the extra. She dropped, I think, athletics, and then she dropped hockey, then she dropped netball. Then she started dropping classes at dance school. So it was very gradual. But, you know, over time, over the months, she just got less and less able to do things. The doctor diagnosed her with chronic fatigue syndrome. They did numerous blood tests. They kept testing her for glandular fever, and that kept coming back negative. Everything looked normal, but obviously it wasn't. So she ended up with this chronic fatigue syndrome label. And this just went on to the summer, and she just wasn't getting any better. And the doctor would just sort of shrug his shoulders and say, "Well, this is chronic fatigue syndrome. We don't really know a lot about it, but, you know, hopefully she'll grow out of it." And then in July of that year, I was watching something, and the HPV vaccination came up. And I just thought, I wonder if that's it. And it was like one of those light bulb eureka moments. And feeling really clever with myself, I looked at it on the internet, found lots and lots of cases of girls exactly like Emily, the same symptoms. You know, it was just, as I said, it was like a light bulb moment. I thought, oh, my goodness, this is it. Went dashing back into the doctor's. Saying, "I know what it is. It's the vaccination." And it was a real anticlimax. I expected him to go, oh, crikey, yes, this is what we'll do about it. But he just sat there and said, well, you know, sometimes vaccinations can have a bit of an effect, but there's not a lot we can do about it now. The vaccine is in her body and we can't take it out. And at that time, I remember coming home absolutely crushed, going on the internet again, and this is when I found Frieda, this wonderful angel in this sort of murky world of nothing happening. There comes Frieda, who explained things to me. She provided me with information. She put me in touch with other families that were going through the same thing. And then gradually, over the 3 year, well, 3.5 years now, we've tried to make sense of it and try and get treatment for Emily. But it has been one heck of a roller coaster ride. Emily was referred to a paediatrician later that year who confirmed the chronic fatigue syndrome diagnosis. Listened to my explanation about the vaccination but didn't actually agree with me. He said it was likely to be a coincidence, and lots of teenagers get chronic fatigue syndrome, and she would just grow out of it. And he told her to go away, carry on exercising. He said, we all feel tired, Emily. You know, you must fight it, you must push through it, don't let it get the better of you. So she did. She came home, she was starting a new term at school, and within a week of that appointment, she was in our accident and emergency, the American version of the UK version of the emergency room in America. And we were there 3 times in that first week. She got up one day and she had literally lost all the feeling down one side of her body, which really scared me. So that was a trip to the emergency room. And they waited until the feeling came back and sent her home. Couldn't find anything wrong, so just put it down to one of those things, sent her home. We were back in again because she was in excruciating abdominal pain. Again, they couldn't find anything. Blood tests were clear, so they sent her home again. And they just kept saying, it's probably due to the chronic fatigue syndrome. Every time we went in, it was everything was related to chronic fatigue syndrome. So I went back to our GP, asked to be referred to a specialist in chronic fatigue syndrome. And we were referred to a special clinic for young people and adolescents with chronic fatigue syndrome. And our first appointment was with a psychologist and a paediatrician. And the only examination they didn't do an examination. The only assessment they did of Emily was for her to complete about three or four questionnaires, and they took a medical history. The questionnaires were mainly psychological. Does she have phobias? Does she have nightmares? Does she ever feel a lack of confidence? Does she ever have feelings of anxiety? And I think there were 2 or 3 questions on pain, what sort of pain she has. So that should have set us up for what was in store. And basically they confirmed chronic fatigue syndrome on the questionnaires and the medical history. And thereafter, the treatment that they gave for Emily was to have her go and speak to the psychologist for an hour every 4 weeks. And she taught Emily about pacing herself, trying not to do too much, scaling everything back, and then gradually building up again. And this went on for months. In September of the next year, sorry, September of that year, 2012, after a not too bad summer, Emily went back to school and she started back full time. She wanted to, you know, to go full at it because she was starting her exam courses. And within a week, she'd had a really bad relapse. And it took her 6 months to come out of that. And she barely went to school for 6 months. She barely left the house for 6 months. The symptoms she had were just horrific. She was so weak a lot of the time, so weak and so dizzy and nauseous, I had to physically almost carry her from the bed to the bathroom. She barely got out of bed, or if she did, she went from the bed to the sofa and back again. She had terrific headaches. We had many, many days when we had to have the house almost in darkness because she just couldn't stand the light on her eyes. She was having problems focusing her eyes. She was having hallucinations, visual disturbances. She had swollen glands. She had chest pains, excruciating chest pains, palpitations. She had constant numbness and pins and needles in her hands and her legs and her feet. Her hands and her feet would be like blocks of ice, really cold, and nothing would warm them up. She'd vomit, constantly vomiting. She had absolute rages that she still has now, where the slightest thing and she would just melt down. These horrific meltdowns. It was really bad. Cognitively as well, she would often struggle to... she was almost incoherent. She would struggle to form a sentence because her thinking was so cloudy. I mean, the term that they use is brain fog. But, you know, half the time she couldn't even spell her own name. She would have to have 3 or 4 attempts just to spell Emily correctly. She would spell step, S-P-E-T. It was bizarre, and it was almost as though someone had taken my wonderful child and put someone completely different in her body. She said, you know, many times she felt like a 90-year-old woman in a teenage body because she just couldn't get her body and her brain to work. So after that relapse, I started looking around. The clinic she went to, the chronic fatigue syndrome clinic, were basically useless. They sit and wring their hands and just say, well, you know, you will grow out of this, Emily. And all the time, the months are ticking away, her education's disappearing. Her dreams are disappearing, and she was getting more and more depressed. So, again, we hit the internet, and some of the contacts that Frieda had put me in touch with, I noticed this, particularly from America, this POTS was coming up a lot in conversation, which is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And someone suggested that I look into it. So I did, and the diagnostic criteria for POTS is when you go from laying down to standing up, the heart rate increases by 30 beats per minute or more, or the heart rate exceeds 120 beats per minute. In adolescence, the increase is 40 beats per minute or more. So we got a heart monitor, tested Emily at home, and sure enough, her heart rate zoomed up. I think it went up to about 160, 170 with her just sat at the computer sometimes. So we searched for I went to a paediatrician and said, look, I found POTS. Could she have this? This is what I've tested. And he basically folded the piece of paper up, gave it back. I said, oh, no. All girls faint. All teenage girls get dizzy. It's just one of those things. You'll have to get up more slowly, Emily. So I actually tracked down a paediatrician with a specialism in POTS and cardiology. I emailed him, gave him all Emily's history, and he agreed to see her. So she was seen by him, she was tested, and the POTS diagnosis was confirmed. So that's where we are at the moment. We still don't know if the chronic fatigue syndrome holds true or whether it was just this rubbish diagnosis that they gave because they didn't know what else to say. But we definitely know she has POTS. And we are finding more and more people, more and more young girls, that are either given the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome or they are not given a diagnosis. They're told it's a teenage girl thing or it's an anxiety problem. And until they speak to us or they know someone with POTS, it goes missed. And more people are finding that their daughters have POTS following the HPV vaccination. And indeed, there has been a very prominent New York neurologist who specializes in POTS. And she's had two articles published in medical journals highlighting her concern that she's seeing girls come to her and they're developing POTS after the HPV vaccination.
If we could get these articles, we would be delighted to post them underneath the screen for the radio show. Frida Burrell, your second guest is on the line. Would you like to say goodbye to this lovely and highly informative lady? What is your name, Adam?
It's Karen.
Karen. Okay.
Karen.
I know you say this at the beginning because there were two interviews.
Karen,
I wasn't
you
sure.
Did it.
Yes,
Karen, you did a wonderful job. You explained everything so clearly. And so if you like to log off now and we'll get on with Trini and I'll speak with you later. But thank you so much, Karen.
Frida.
And thank
Bye.
Emily too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, love. Thank you. Hi, is Trini there?
Yes, I'm going to pick her up now.
Okay, thanks, Sally.
Trini?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. This is Frida.
Hi, Frida. How
Hi.
Are you?
I'm good. How are you, love?
I'm very well, thank you. There's a little bit of delay on the line, but I think it'll work just fine.
Everything
That's sounds
good.
Fine to
okay.
Hear.
Right. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to say a few words, and then it's over to you, Trini, to tell your story and Malcolm's story. And I believe that this all started, your nightmare started for both of you on the 15th of April, 2011. And if you want to pick up from there and tell exactly what happened to Malcolm, and to let the listeners know, Trini and her husband Malcolm live in Greece, in Europe. So now, Trini, we would love to hear your story, and we know it's a very sad one and that there's been a lot of heartache. So, Trini, you tell your story.
Thank you. Yes, what happened was that my husband was going to the Ivory Coast on a work assignment, and in order to get into the Ivory Coast, you need a yellow fever vaccine. The vaccine my husband got was the YFVax, which is produced by Sanofi Pasteur. I believe it's also available in the U.S. And less than 24 hours after getting the shot, my husband developed a very high fever. And we could not bring the fever down. And with the fever came insomnia. He became irrational. He became emotional. He was eventually hospitalized. He started hallucinating. He started seeing his e-book flying through the air, and he told me and other people that his dead friends were getting in touch with him, telling him what to do, sending him messages. He started believing that he was the Messiah, and he simply disappeared into a very, very deep and very, very severe psychosis. Eventually, Malcolm, my husband, was put in a locked-up psychiatric ward where he ended up spending 8 months of his life battling this very, very severe psychosis. During that time, he believed that he was the Messiah. He believed he was a wise man. He believed that he was Jesus, and he believed that he was the devil. The devil period was definitely the worst period of all. my husband thought that he was the devil. He also thought he was a suicide bomber and that he was carrying a bomb in his tummy. But during the devil period of this very, very severe psychosis, he tried to commit suicide. Excuse me, this is still very raw for me. My husband tried to commit suicide because the devil was giving him all these ultimatums that if my husband did not kill himself, our son and I would die, the world would go under. All these terrible, terrible, terrible things were going to happen unless my husband killed himself. That is how bad his psychosis was. Now, during all of this, I tried to get in touch with Sanofi Pasteur, the vaccine maker, to tell them about my husband's case. I was begging them to investigate, to try to find out what had happened here. When my husband had the YF vaccine, the yellow fever vaccine, I did not know that psychosis can happen. Later on, I learned that, yes, it is true, and the vaccine maker knows this. They have even admitted that they know of other cases of mental disorders related to this vaccine. Yet, when I approached Sanofi Pasteur, they did nothing to help us. They just kept on telling us that there is no link between my husband's illness and the vaccine. So it has been a battle, an uphill battle, you know, for more than 2.5 years. My husband ended up losing his job. We had to move from Greece. We are actually in Denmark today. I am Danish. Slowly, slowly trying to get back on our feet, but we lost everything. My husband lost his job. He lost his reputation. And during all of this, we have done whatever we could to try to investigate what happened. For instance, we have shared all of my husband's medical records with Sanofi Pasteur, the vaccine maker. Sanofi Pasteur says that they have investigated the vaccine, yet they will not tell us what they have found. They will not share the results of this investigation with us. But they just keep on insisting that there is no link between my husband's illness and the vaccine. The thing is, we have no way of knowing, you know, if they're lying or have they actually investigated anything, because they will not give us access to their investigation. But what I did do was we gave Sanofi Pasteur permission to speak to all of my husband's doctors in order to try to clarify what happened, why he became so ill. I went back and I checked with the doctors. Not one of them has been contacted by Sanofi Pasteur. So when Sanofi Pasteur says that it has investigated the vaccine, they're lying. They're simply lying. And it's just incredible that, you know, such a big company like Sanofi Pasteur will lie to its consumers again and again and again. Now, when my husband fell ill, I thought that, you know, he was a one in a million case, that this had never happened to anyone else, that no one else had ever had a psychosis from this vaccine. It turned out I was wrong. It turned out when I investigated, I went to the WHO's monitoring center in Uppsala and found 400 adverse events reports where it is stated that this vaccine has caused some kind of mental disorder. 400. Now, we all know the percentage of adverse events reports. It's between 3 to 10%. So if you do the math and you will see how many more cases there are out there. And when we started publicizing my husband's case, we got in touch with several other people who have suffered something similar to what my husband suffered. And the worst bit of all of this is that the vaccine maker knows. Big Pharma knows that the vaccine, the yellow fever vaccine, can cause psychosis. But they do nothing about it because for them, it's all about the money. You know, they say that vaccines are safe. They say vaccines are here to help us. But they are lying, lying, lying. And, you know, what happened to my husband should not have happened to anyone. I'm happy to report that my husband is fine today. The psychosis has gone. He's back at work, slowly, slowly. But it's been very, very painful and a very, very difficult journey for him and for us as a family, especially for our teenage son. to reach to the point where we are today, where we are slowly trying to get back on our feet. But I am so upset and I'm so angry, not just as a wife, but as a consumer. You see, I was one of those people who believed in vaccines. My son was a preemie. You know, he was born prematurely in Miami, Florida, and was very sick for the first few years of his life. Every vaccine his doctors, his pediatrician recommended, he had. He even had, you know, the very controversial H1N1 vaccine, because I believed in my doctors and I believed in the pharmaceutical industry when they told me the vaccines are safe. Now I just don't know what to believe anymore because of, you know, what happened to my husband and because of the fact that Sanofi Pasteur has done nothing to help him, has done nothing to help us as a family, and has done nothing to investigate the vaccine. They're actually bragging. Sanofi Pasteur is bragging. I have a video clip where the head of Sanofi Pasteur's development department is bragging about how the yellow fever vaccine has not been developed since the 1960s. Because there is no money in developing a new vaccine. That is how little Sanofi Pasteur cares about its consumers. I have no words to describe how disgusted I am about this.
Well, that is, you know, your story is so tragic, Trini, and we all feel for you. I was delighted to hear that Malcolm is getting back into work. Is he still being a correspondent?
He is. My husband is as you know, a foreign correspondent, but he lost his job with the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, and he is still extremely stigmatized by this whole experience. It is very difficult to come back when you have been as ill as my husband was. But I am married to a survivor. I am so, so lucky. I am married to a survivor, and, you know, he pulled through. He could have died, as other people have, from this vaccine, but my husband pulled through, and you know, we made it. He made it as a human being. He's completely normal again today. There is no residue whatsoever of the psychosis. He's off all of his medication. He doesn't need to see doctors anymore. He is, you know, back to his good old bouncy self, the healthy human being he was before he had the yellow fever vaccine. But there are other people out there. We are in touch with a young Brit at the moment who suffered something similar to what my husband suffered just recently. You know, these cases keep popping up, and no one is doing anything about it. And it's just the, you know, as consumers of these vaccines, we are completely unprotected because the laws protect big pharma. I know we have the vaccine compensation program, but it's no good. It's really no good. Not in Europe, where I'm based, or in the U.S. It is no good. We are so unprotected. When a vaccine goes wrong, there is no one really to help us. And that is what we as consumers have to face and have to do something about. We have to persuade our politicians to change the laws so when an injury happens, the proof of burden does not rest with the victim, but with the pharmaceutical company.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's 100% support there. Did you have any of your doctors who have known both of you for a long time, did they stand by you?
Yes, all our doctors have stood by us and are standing by us. All the doctors that we have been in touch with through this, you know, very, very painful period all agree that my husband's psychosis was caused by the vaccine. There is absolutely no doubt whatsoever. You know, there are all these classical things whereby you determine whether or not a reaction is caused by a drug, like, you know, onset of time of symptoms, medical history, any other drugs involved. You know, there is nothing of that. You know, there is no other cause than the yellow fever vaccine. And the doctors we have been in touch with, you know, during this time of my husband's illness all agree. The only one who doesn't agree is Sanofi Pasteur. And it's not, they know. But you see, the other thing is Sanofi Pasteur is a big, you know, multi-billion company. We're just Mr. and Mrs. Brabant from Copenhagen, Denmark, where we lost everything because of this. We're just slowly, slowly trying to get on our feet financially. We don't have the money or the resources to take on Big Pharma.
No. understand that, Vanita. It's too huge a ladder to climb, and that's how they know that they're quite safe. It happens with all vaccines, as I'm sure Sally will agree, that when a child is injured, a family don't have the money to take anyone to court, etc. Malcolm's life before the vaccine, as you say, he's now coming back to what he was like earlier. Was he detoxed in any way, or was it just more psychosis medication he was given?
No, my husband has been on massive amounts of antipsychotic medication in order to battle this psychosis. He has been so medicated, you will not believe it. But he has pulled through, because my husband is a survivor. And, you know, one other thing my husband has done for himself, first and foremost, but also in an effort to get some financial means together so we can keep on fighting Sanofi Pasteur, is he has actually written a book about his ordeal. He's written a book called Malcolm is a Little Unwell, and it is available as an ebook on Amazon.com, you know, as a Kindle book. And if you do want to support our cause and our fight against Big Pharma, please have a look and buy it if you can afford it and you feel like it. Malcolm is a Little Unwell by Malcolm Brabant, available on Amazon.com. Yes, my husband is back to normal, but we were very, very lucky. Other people have died from this vaccine. And I think our luck, my husband's luck, is simply that he is such a strong person and such a strong character. He's got an iron will. You know, he pulled through because he decided that that was what he wanted to do. I don't know any other person who could have done what my husband has done. We were just so, so lucky.
Yeah, that's totally amazing, because I know when we first got in touch with you through Norma, and we heard your story, and oh, we were just so devastated for you, because we could understand that he wasn't getting support from his work, and he was in such a deep state of trauma and illness and the stress that must have been on your good self. So to hear that he has come back is just amazing, and it's the best news I think all of us could have heard. Are you in touch with other people who have been affected by this vaccine?
Yes, we are. We are, as word began to spread, you know, people came forward to us and told us about whatever they had experienced with the vaccine. One is a 14-year-old boy, for instance. But the problem here is that, you know, mental illness stigmatizes you. In many parts of the world, you get very stigmatized by mental illness. So very few people are prepared to actually, you know, come forward publicly and talk about this. But we are in touch with other people who have suffered absolutely the same thing as my husband suffered. So, you know, this is not a one-off. I mean, the 400 reports of mental disorders related to this vaccine that can be found at the WHO in Sweden is evidence of this. This happens far more often than we are told. And that is the case. This is not just about the yellow fever vaccine. This is about all vaccines, and this is about our choice as consumers. Do we actually believe Big Pharma when they tell us these stories about how safe these vaccines are, or do we need to think twice before we have a vaccine? You know, I don't know. As a consumer, you know, I'm still a bit confused. Do I say absolutely no more vaccines ever? Am I completely anti-vaccine now? Or, for instance, something like polio, is it not the best way of getting rid of polio? I'm confused. I really am. I don't have the answers. But what I do know is that Big Pharma has to change its attitudes towards its consumer. Otherwise, we're just going to desert them. We're going to leave. You know, we're going to spend our money somewhere else. We're going to turn our backs to Big Pharma.
May I say something at this juncture in regard to the polio vaccine, that has been a huge deceit as well, and I must refer everybody who's listening to this program to dissolvingillusions.com, which will dispel the myth of the benefit of the polio vaccine. Please proceed.
Okay, listen, I'm no expert on the polio vaccine. I'm just trying to I'm trying
no, no,
to
no.
express.
I just don't want anyone to think that there is any benefit to any vaccine whatsoever, because there is not. They're 100% poison. They create all diseases in internal medicine, and the intent is to have created them. And I have all the proof necessary on my legislation, Ban Vaccines 2013 and Vaccine Free NYC.
Well, I must say, my husband's case certainly, you know, backs up what you're saying, because the vaccine nearly killed him. The vaccine that was supposed to protect him and help him nearly killed him and sent him crazy for more than 8 months. So, you know, very fair point.
Yes, he would have to be very careful because his immune system would have been compromised. And he would have to be very careful if he ever decided to have another vaccine, in case it stirred up more trouble for him, you know. But the point that I'm so happy to hear, which I didn't know, is that he's bubbling again and a lot better, which is bound to make you feel an awful lot better as well, Trini. And that is the best news ever, and that he's now back to work little by little. But he's making great progress, and the fight goes on, because it's the same with HPV vaccine young girls. I mean, I know a family in the United Kingdom whose daughter was sectioned, and she was put into a psychiatric unit, and they said that she had a total nervous breakdown. Probably what more has happened is that she's got brain injury from the HPV vaccine, as many of the youngsters have in some form or other. And this is what's happened to Malcolm, but he has come through it, and as you say, he's a man to be very proud of, and we are, so pass on that to him before us, and absolutely delighted that he's back to his good self. So you just carry on with your struggle, with your fight to get heard.
And I will, you know, I am going to be campaigning, you know, until Sanofi Pasteur acknowledges that this vaccine caused my husband's illness. You know, we need more transparency from Big Pharma as consumers. You know, Big Pharma puts profits first, you know, and they cannot be trusted. It has to change. And we as consumers are the only ones who can change it. And we will. I will.
Yeah. No, we will. And it's starting in Europe already, in France, where the French are starting to fight back, and there's legal cases on the Gardasil vaccine, etc. And doctors are now standing behind that petition, saying they're not happy that the president is wanting to expand the HPV vaccine program. So there is movement. There's definitely movement. And I know that in the yellow fever vaccine, perhaps the numbers are not as huge as in other spheres, but it has to come out, and pharmaceutical companies have got to be held accountable. There's no doubt about that. And with the strength that your husband has now got, and your strength, you're now going to take them on full force.
No, we are. I mean, I just will not give up. You know, we are taking them on, and we will keep on fighting, because this should not have happened to my husband. This should not happen to anyone. And the only way we can talk is with our money. It's because it's the only thing that Big Pharma really cares about is profit. And if we just turn our backs to them, if we say we're not going to buy your products, no matter how safe you say they are, we're not going to buy them until we can trust you, then maybe they'll change the tune. I doubt it, but it's worth a try. We have to do something,
yeah.
Because, I mean, we are, you know, with the HPV vaccine, for instance, in my opinion, we are risking a whole generation of young girls here by giving them this vaccine. And, you know, it has not even been proved scientifically that it actually does prevent cancer. You know,
exactly.
some politicians somewhere have just, you know, decided that this vaccine is the vaccine they want, and that's the way it's going to be. But it's not scientifically proven. It's just, you know,
no, exactly.
I have expert. I have
we,
the world.
We have less.
We
have
I have
less
the world leading. Okay, can
we
I just say that the world? Sorry.
We have less than a minute.
Okay, I just want to thank you. Thank you very much for this opportunity to come on your show, and please support my husband and I. Malcolm is a little unwell. Amazon.com by my husband, Malcolm Brabant. Thank you.
Thank you,
anything.
Trini, and thank you for telling your story. Thank you, Sally.
Yes, please, both of
you.
You
say the final word.
Yes, I hope to inform both of you to scroll down to the comment area and add links that will inform